Welcome to the Agency in Focus SOCOM, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
More than 30 years after U.S. Special Operations Command was first created, almost everyone agrees that SOCOM has dramatically improved the military special operations capabilities. But the idea of a dedicated combatant command for special forces was highly controversial back in 1987. And the Pentagon did all it could to kill the idea. Even President Ronald Reagan was opposed. In a signing statement at the time, he wrote that the Nunn-Cohen amendment that created SOCOM was probably unconstitutional. For a bit of history behind the U.S. Special Operations Command, our first guest for the series is Jim Locker. He was the Pentagon's first Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict. Before that, he was senior staffer on the Senate Armed Services Committee, who helped draft both the Nunn-Cohen Amendment and, earlier the same year, the Goldwater-Nichols Act. As he told Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, a pair of the military's operational failures a few years earlier served as the spark for both pieces of legislation.
The failed operation in the Iranian desert, known as Desert One or Operation Eagle Claw, was both the spark for the Goldwater-Nichols Act, which transformed the whole Pentagon Department of Defense organization, and eventually the special operations reforms known as the Cohen-Nunn Amendment after the two leading senators. That operation showed a serious deficiency in our inability to do joint operations because it involved all of the services, but it also showed how much our special operations forces had atrophied since the end of the Vietnam War. And the key indication of that was the Air Force had didn't have enough infiltration helicopters, long-range helicopters, to be able to conduct this operation. And we ended up using mine countermeasure helicopters from the Navy, with Navy and Marine Corps pilots, and it led to the failure. Six helicopters arrived, and then a helicopter and a C-130 collided, and the mission had to be aborted. And that was really a spark both for Goldwater-Nichols and for the special operations reforms. The special operations reforms were also promoted by the misuse of special operations forces in our incursion into Grenada, Operation Urgent Fury. You know, the conventional commanders did not know how to use special operations forces. They were misused. They ended up conducting raids that they had planned to do during dark, during the daylight hours. And when the Congress found out about the Grenada problem, it really sparked their interest in making sweeping reforms. So those were the two operational things that contributed especially to the Cohen-Nunn Amendment.
So you mentioned that special ops had atrophied since the end of Vietnam, which suggests that the problems that you saw as you were starting about the process of reform weren't just policy and organizational problems. They were, to some degree, resourcing problems, too.
Absolutely. You know, the special operations forces were starved for resources. The services were deactivating units. At one point in time, the Air Force tried to get rid of all of their special operations aircraft. The budgets were minimal, and acquisition programs took forever to complete for special operators. I remember the story of it taking 17 years to get a swimmer delivery vehicle for the Navy SEALs. So it was more than policy and organization. It came down to resources as well.
So you had a leading role in both the drafting of Goldwater-Nichols and the Nunn-Cohen Amendment. Talk a bit about why you and your colleagues on Capitol Hill decided not to tackle soft reform as part of Goldwater-Nichols.
Well, Goldwater-Nichols was a major piece of legislation, ended up being more than 85 pages of law. And at the time that we were working on understanding the need for special operations reform, we only had a few members of Congress who had taken an interest and had become knowledgeable, and we were afraid that we were not quite intellectually prepared to offer the best reforms for special operations, but that in the larger Goldwater-Nichols debates, we might end up losing these provisions, given the fact that they were not well understood and didn't have a significant number of support from members. And so it was decided that we would tackle it in a separate piece of legislation and ended up in the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 1987. The Goldwater-Nichols and Cohen Nunn are related in a number of ways. First of all, the Goldwater-Nichols Act provided a tremendous understanding on Capitol Hill of defense organization, especially of the unified commands where lots of provisions were adopted. But Goldwater-Nichols also provided a political path for doing the Cohen-Nunn Amendment. You know, the Department of Defense's credibility on organizational issues after Goldwater-Nichols was near zero. And so a few members were able to put together some powerful ideas on special operations reform and make them happen. But in addition, all of that work on Goldwater-Nichols benefited those who were trying to draft the special operations reforms, because we had great insights as to how the Pentagon was organized and how we thought we could organize both a civilian official and a combatant commander to perform the duties that were necessary.
And just to put a finer point on some of what you just said, Jim, I think also critically, at the point at which the soft reforms start being discussed, Goldwater-Nichols had just passed the Senate by a vote of 95-0, which is a demonstration at that point to the Pentagon that it's not going to be extremely fruitful to try and block defense organizational reforms of any kind.
That's correct. And in addition, the Pentagon itself began to propose some ideas. They were much less than what members of the Senate and House had in mind. But there was an understanding on the Pentagon's part that they were not going to be able to stonewall on the special operations reforms as they attempted to do on the Goldwater-Nichols Act.
Before we talk a little bit about what the different paths that the House and the Senate were trying to take in their legislation, let's talk about what was happening inside the Pentagon. Overall, at the top levels of leadership, there was pretty strong resistance, I think, to these reforms. But there was also this small cadre of folks inside the Pentagon who are quietly advocating and thinking about soft reform, the folks that you call the Soft Liberation Front. Tell us a bit about who they are and how they get away with what they're doing at a time when the Pentagon is just not interested in doing anything in this area.
In that regard was Noel Cook, who was the principal deputy assistant secretary of defense for international security affairs. When he came into that position, he had a great interest in counterterrorism. And so he set up a special planning office to begin to work on improving capabilities for counterterrorism, but also for revitalizing special operations forces. And he recruited some people. Lynn Rhylander came and served as his deputy in that office. But he had Colonel George McGovern, a former commander of the 5th Special Forces Group, and a number of other people from the special operations community with great interest. And they were determined to bring about the reforms that were necessary. And they made some modest improvements in the budgets, but they just found resistance elsewhere. And Noel Cook was a real champion and worked on these issues very, very hard, but it became clear that the Pentagon was not going to yield on any of the initiatives that they were proposing. And that's when people in this Soft Liberation Front turned their attention to the Congress to try to get some legislation enacted.
So let's talk about that legislation, starting with the Senate side where you worked. What was the structure that you developed on the Senate side?
Well, on the Senate side, the key element that we had in mind was to create a combatant command. whatever we did, we wanted to have things that were going to be in the mainstream of Department of Defense action. So we had in mind that we were going to create a combatant command, but it was only going to be one-third a combatant command. It was going to be two-thirds like a service headquarters for special operations forces. So the commander of the combatant command would be like a service chief for special operations forces. And then we had in mind that we needed a civilian official who could work on policy in the Office of the Secretary of Defense and could represent the special operations community in interagency meetings at the National Security Council. So we had in mind an Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict and a United States Special Operations Command. Over on the House of Representatives, they had a very different model in mind. Mm-hmm. They wanted to create a defense agency and put all of the special operations forces in a defense agency. And they wanted the head of that agency to be a civilian who would be in the operational chain of command. You know, the Senate did not favor that approach, but they were quite different approaches. The Senate's approach was really kind of grounded in its understanding of defense organization out of Goldwater-Nichols. The people in the House who worked on that provision had not been involved in Goldwater-Nichols, so they developed their separate ideas.
And I think part of the issue here was that the way in which the soft reforms were informed by Goldwater-Nichols had partly to do with the strengthened role that you had just given to combatant commanders, right, of which the new SOCOM commander would be one.
Absolutely. You know, we had the benefit that Goldwater-Nichols was going to strengthen the combatant commanders, really give them the authority they needed to carry out their missions around the world. And so that authority was already in place, and then we just needed to figure out what was the additional authority that the commander of the U.S. Special Operations Command would need.
So most of the reforms that the Senate was producing are what ultimately made it into the amendment, but some of the House's ideas did too, right? Like giving the commander or giving the new organization its own budget authority?
That started in the House, and they need to be given credit for that because that was really a hugely important part of the Cohen-Nunn Amendment. And then in conference, when we were talking about it, we decided we had all of these acquisition problems that we needed to give the command the authority to do its own acquisition. You know, we had expected that the services would do the acquiring for them, but they would be in control. And then there might be some highly specialized things that they would want to do the research, development, acquisition on their own. But that was something we added in conference. But you're absolutely right. The House's idea to give the command its own budget was a very innovative and most useful idea.
Jim Locker is former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Coming up after the break, Locker describes the pushback he received from the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions, utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Change can often be not well received. It takes persistence to push through major reforms at any large organization. And that was definitely tough for Jim Locker, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict. In part two of his interview with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, Locker explains why he thinks he received so much pushback when proposing the creation of U.S. Special Operations Command.
I think the overall reason was that the kinds of missions that special operations forces were going to take on, counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, peacekeeping, contingency operations, those were the kinds of things that the Pentagon really did not want to get involved with. You know, we had the American way of war, which was really conventional force on force. And indirect aggression, you know, we had for a long time treated as lesser included cases. And so the kinds of things that the Cohen-Nunn Amendment were trying to improve our ability to address were things that the mainstream Pentagon officers and officials did not want to be part of the Pentagon's responsibility. Matter of fact, one thing that's worth mentioning is that when the Senate Armed Services Committee was looking at the need for what became Goldwater Nichols, it did a big study of where the U.S. military was having setbacks. And it was that we were unable to address indirect aggression, which was occurring primarily in the developing world, the terrorism and the insurgency and the drug warfare and all of those kinds of issues, the Department of Defense did not have the skills for. While it was preparing for a global war with the Soviet Union, it had neglected these areas. And so it was a very visionary view by Senator Cohen and Senator Nunn that sort of said, you know, as we look to the future, we're going to see more of this, not less, and we need to develop the capability to take on these threats effectively. And so that's where, you know, that strong view by the Senate Armed Services Committee, where it came from. But the Pentagon did not have the same view.
And you learned about that resistance in a very firsthand way a few years after the passage of the amendment when you became the first Senate-confirmed assistant secretary for Solik in 1989. And to read your account, it sounds like the service chiefs basically treated you like a hostile foreign power who'd been sent by Congress to the Pentagon to ruin everything. They wanted you gone pretty much immediately, right?
Well, they did. You know, there was a tremendous amount of resistance. Secretary Dick Cheney asked me to come over and serve as ASD Solik. And when I was waiting for the Senate confirmation, I got a great sense of how opposed the Pentagon was. And there was one thing that occurred that brought that message clearly home to me. I saw General Al Gray, who was the Commandant of the Marine Corps and somebody I'd known for 10 years. He was walking towards me in a Pentagon corridor, and he came and he grabbed my arm and he took me into a dark corner and he said, "I just came from a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They made three decisions this morning. Number one, they want to get rid of you, Mr. Locker. Number two, they want to disestablish the office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Solik. And number three, they want to disestablish the U.S. Special Operations Command." And so this was 3 years after the law was passed. And the Pentagon was still quite determined to resist this legislation. And it was that meeting with General Gray in a Pentagon corridor that convinced me I needed to pull Capitol Hill as close to me as I could. And that's when I named the legislation the Cohen-Nunn Amendment, because I wanted to remind everybody continuously that we had some very powerful members of Capitol Hill who were supporting this legislation and would overwatch the Pentagon's implementation.
That's Jim Locker, the Defense Department's first Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict. Hear the rest of the interview after another quick break. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Jim Locker, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
So this seems to me like it must have just been an enormously difficult job. Your job is to implement the legislation that you had helped write. Meanwhile, you're working around and with service chiefs who unanimously hate it and want to undo it. How did you survive and how did you go about that initial implementation work? I assume part of it is because you had the support of Secretary Cheney, but...
The work was incredibly difficult. We were really beginning a new business in the Department of Defense, trying to give attention to special operations forces and to all of the low-intensity conflict missions. There were some supporters. The combatant commanders were highly supportive of what we were trying to do because the kinds of capabilities we were looking to develop and could provide were what they needed to face challenges in their areas of operation. The National Security Council staff was highly supportive because many of the incidents that we were having around the world required Special Operations Forces capabilities. There were a few offices in the Office of the Secretary of Defense and the J-5 staff down on the Joint Staff who were supportive, but you're right, the rest of the Pentagon was very much against this and put as many obstacles as they could in front of us. I had a Marine Corps Major General that worked for me, Charlie Wilhelm, and he said the things he could get done in Headquarters Marine Corps in 2 days will take him 2 months in the SOLIC office just because of the resistance and obstacles put in front of us. So our progress was quite slow. We persevered. We did have the Congress supporting us. Great budgetary support from the Congress. They would plus up our budget $150 to $200 million every year. If we had some authorities that we needed in law, they would take action on those as well. But most importantly, they were conducting overwatch. But it was a tremendous struggle.
All right, let's talk broadly across the vast sweep of history since 1980 up until 2018. What can we say about the effect of the reforms Congress made back in 1987 in terms of how special operations forces, in terms of what they were capable of prior to the reform compared to now?
Well, last April, we celebrated the 30th anniversary of the creation of the command. It was actually stood up in April of 1987. And so we were taking stock then of how well things had gone. And I think the view, especially of those people like Senator Cohen and Senator Nunn, who formulated the legislation, was just absolute delight at how the original provisions were carried out as we had envisioned. But then people in the special operations world, were able to look at where else these ideas could go. And, their performance, whether it was in Operation Just Cause in Panama or in Iraq or in Afghanistan, their ability to kill Osama bin Laden, all of the operations that they have done around the world, and all of the things they've done in more peaceful settings where they've gone out and done their work with the Green Berets, and it's just been remarkable period of success for the Special Operations Forces. That's sort of been a unanimous view of the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, came, and that was a view that he had expressed as well.
Jim Locker is former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Find this entire interview online. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, SOCOM, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus.